This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and happy day before Thanksgiving, everybody. So one of the rules that helps many families get through this holiday is don't talk about politics. But because this is the day before Thanksgiving, we're going to begin with politics, and maybe we can get it out of our system ahead of time. So it's hard to believe, but we're just 8 weeks and a couple of days away from the Iowa caucuses, a little more than 9 weeks away from the New Hampshire primary. So joining us with a pre-holiday political update is Ken Rudin. He's a former NPR political editor and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast and website. And Ken, welcome back to Radio Boston. Always great to have you.
Thank you, Anthony. Do you think we're not going to talk about politics tomorrow?
Well, I want to get into that with you. But first, we're definitely going to talk about politics now. I want to start with the Republican side of the presidential race. Our latest poll is consistent with all kinds of other polls, which finds Donald Trump continuing to lead in this crowded field. Are you surprised that he continues to dominate this field?
I am stunned because I think I know everything about politics. And every time you have a Donald Trump who comes along, it proves that I have no idea what's going on about politics at all. In the past, whenever a candidate would say something either unbelievably incendiary or completely false or makes up stuff or just says wrong things, the media will call him out on it, him or her out on it. His fellow candidates would do the same. Donald Trump, whenever he says something that is either incorrect, deliberately incorrect, misleading, or, as I said, inflammatory, his numbers go up in the polls. I've never seen anything like it. People talk about comparing him to George Wallace or Ross Perot. There's no comparison. I've just never seen a candidate who the more things he says that the media says, this is absolutely wrong, the more his numbers go up.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. Well, let's listen to a bit of Donald Trump. Here he is speaking last week in Worcester, Mass, about building that wall to keep Mexicans out of the U.S.
I've been talking about the wall for a long time. We're going to build it. It's going to be really a real wall. It's going to be a great wall, and it's going to be paid for by Mexico. Believe me, 100%. 100%. We're not paying for it.
So there's Donald Trump in Worcester. Now, Ken, a lot of other Republicans haven't been responding critically to Trump, but yesterday the campaign of Ohio Governor John Kasich released a tough video that attacks Trump for some of his dangerous rhetoric. It features retired Air Force Colonel Tom Moe, who paraphrased famous words by the concentration camp survivor Marin Niemöller. Here's a bit of what he said.
You might not care if Donald Trump says Muslims must register with their government because you're not one. And you might not care if Donald Trump says he's going to round up all the Hispanic immigrants because you're not one. But think about this. If he keeps going and he actually becomes president, he might just get around to you. And you better hope that there's someone left to help you.
So that comes from the campaign != of Governor John Kasich. Ken, what do you make of Kasich going after Trump like this?
Well, in all fairness, it's put out by a campaign who was no longer part of the conversation. Once upon a time, John Kasich's name was up there among the leaders. After the first Republican debate, people thought that he did very, very well, stood out from the crowd, and just had a lot of sensible positions. But most of the time, if you looked at the last debate, he seemed to be almost whining for more time. His numbers have decreased. He's really, when he stands up there and says Donald Trump wants to deport 12 million Latinos, how in the world is that possible? He knows it's not possible, and he tries to make sense, but it's hard to make sense in a debate that is dominated by a Donald Trump. And you talk about the other Republican candidates, many of whom have not criticized Donald Trump. But one, I think the last thing the Republicans want to do is just respond to Donald Trump, because that would be a full-time job. And two, if you notice what Ted Cruz is doing, now Ted Cruz seems to be rising in the polls. Ted Cruz, from the beginning, has never said a critical word about Donald Trump. He felt that there's no way a Trump candidacy could last as long as through Iowa, New Hampshire, and into the other states. And what Cruz is betting on is that many of his disappointed supporters will flock to his candidacy. And the latest polls show that Cruz is edging up on the top front runners.
All right. Well, that's Ted Cruz. I want to talk about another one. Florida Senator Marco Rubio getting a lot of attention. He brings a message from a younger generation, the sort of compelling immigrant family story, very comfortable, very polished on the stump. I've seen him a couple of times up in New Hampshire. What part of his message is appealing to his supporters?
Well, I think if you make the argument that, first of all, when he was first elected to the Senate in 2010, he did so with tremendous Tea Party support. But then he got a little falling out with conservatives shortly after he came to the Senate, when he became one of the Gang of Seven trying to put forward an immigration overhaul. And that really turned off a lot of conservatives. But what I like about Marco Rubio, and it shows in the polls, and it shows in the debates, that he is cool and he's calm and he's collected. That sounds like a commercial, but he is, and he's not. He doesn't come off as rabid. He doesn't come off criticizing his fellow candidates. When Jeb Bush thought that the smart policy was to go after Rand Paul, Rand Paul just didn't react. To Marco Rubio. Mm-hmm. Rubio didn't react badly at all. He seems to be the establishment choice. If you make the argument that Donald Trump and Ben Carson will disappear because sanity will take over the Republican Party, then it seems to be a Ted Cruz versus Marco Rubio battle, and that's the one we should be watching. But again, we still have, as you point out, we have 77 days until the New Hampshire primary. That is a long time from now.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about another candidate, and I'm going to ask you a trivia question, which I bet you know the answer to, because we're going to talk about the candidate now who has made more visits to New Hampshire than any other candidate. Do you know who it is?
Is it Chris Christie?
You got it. Oh, well done.
Oh,
so there we are. He's been lagging in the polls, but the New York Times did a really interesting piece this week from New Hampshire talking about how Christie is attracting big crowds, really pushing the issue of security and safety in the wake of the Paris attacks. So here he is talking at a town hall in Windham, New Hampshire this past weekend.
The borders have to be secure, so don't worry about ISIS operatives coming across porous borders. Second, got to enhance our intelligence capability. Third, we've got to make sure that we get with our allies in the Middle East and let them understand that we're going to stand with them in this fight against ISIS.
Now, Ken, one of the things he's doing, and he's doing it pretty effectively in front of large crowds, is really sort of evoking in a very credible way the emotion that he felt post 9/11. He knew people who perished. Of course, he was very close to it as governor of New Jersey. But two questions about Chris Christie. How do the Paris attacks change this race? And what do you think of his candidacy at this point?
Well, yeah, back then in 9/11, actually, he was U.S. attorney. But I think the reason that he is doing as well as he is, or at least the perception that he's increased in stature since the Paris attacks on November 13th, is that as a former U.S. attorney, he has dealt with these kind of issues of security, of terrorism, and things like that. And the question was always going to be, where does the Republican Party go after such a terrible attack in Paris? Do they go for somebody with experience like a Chris Christie, or somebody who is a governor or a senator, somebody they can envision as commander-in-chief? Or, as you point out, as we heard from the tapes earlier, do you go after somebody who wants to close the border, monitor mosques, have a catalog of Muslims in the country? And you just don't know which side will win out at the end. But right now, Chris Christie, even though he was demoted to the kids' table debate because of his sagging poll numbers, he seems to be on a little bit of a rebound after the attacks in Paris, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it seems like it. Well, let's move over to the Democrats. And really, New Hampshire seems to be the only primary state where there's even a contest. Hillary Clinton has big leads in Iowa, South Carolina. Does New Hampshire represent the whole game for Bernie Sanders at this point?
Well, I mean, as a journalist, you always want a battle. You don't want a coronation. And of course, it's interesting, after the first Democratic debate, everybody thought that Hillary Clinton was really in a very strong position. She not only had a great day during the Benghazi hearings, where she handled every question almost effortlessly, but she also did very well in the debate. And then came the second debate, where Bernie Sanders asked serious questions, one about her relationship with the banks and Wall Street, And when she gave an answer that, well, I get contributions from Wall Street because I represented New York on 9/11.
That was a strange answer, wasn't it?
It was probably one of the biggest unforced errors she made in this whole campaign. But also Bernie Sanders tries to make the case that if, given what's going on in the Middle East, you didn't start yesterday. You had started on the vote in 2002 to go to war in Iraq, the one that George W. Bush, President Bush, pushed forward. Bernie Sanders voted against it. Hillary Clinton voted for it. That's Sanders' argument that her judgment is in question.
Mm. But speaking of the Paris attacks, post-Paris attacks, do you agree that this issue really plays to Hillary Clinton's strengths and, in a sense, harms Sanders because it prevents him from talking about the issues that are in his wheelhouse, economic disparity and all that?
Well, that doesn't stop him from speaking about it, but I agree with you completely. The one criticism that progressives had about Hillary Clinton may be her ultimate strength, and the fact is she supports a more hawkish, a more aggressive foreign policy than President Obama. She's talked about supporting the free Syrian opposition to Assad from the beginning, whereas when Bernie Sanders was asked what's the biggest danger facing the country, he said global warming. Now, maybe in some way it is global warming, but this debate came the day after the attacks in Paris, and a lot of people, you know, scratched their heads and say there must be something more insidious than global warming right now.
Yeah. Ken, we make the point again and again that New Hampshire voters are notoriously hard to predict. They often make up their minds at the very last minute. Do you think this coming February is going to offer any surprises? What kind of surprises might there be?
You know, 4 years ago at this time, remember, after the collapse of Rick Perry and the collapse of Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich became the front runner.
That's right.
In the Republican polls. In 2003, the front runner was Howard Dean well into January of 2004. So we have been surprised before. And so these numbers that we see in November may not hold until then. Having said that, I predicted the fall, the ultimate collapse of Donald Trump for weeks now. It is not happening. Eventually, I think it's going to happen, but it may not. And the question is, who becomes the alternative to Donald Trump? Once we thought it was Ben Carson, but we saw it as we saw in an interview on Fox News Sunday, he really doesn't have a good grasp of foreign policy. And as they said, you know, in the aftermath of what happened in Paris, that is a position. Those are policy issues that a president must know, and Ben Carson seems to have failed that test.
All right. Finally, Ken, I want to come back to this idea of Thanksgiving and how people, how families should avoid talking about politics.
Lots of luck with that.
So here's a clip from this past weekend's Saturday Night Live. Listen to this.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
I am so thankful to have you all here today.
I am thankful that I only burned the turkey a little bit. I'm sorry, gang.
You know, I am thankful that our governor is not going to let those refugees in here.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. So, Ken, what about the Rudin household? Do you guys talk politics on Thanksgiving, or is that out of bounds?
No, we do. And the funny thing is every time I go to a family function, they think because I cover politics, I know what's going on. So they say, Ken, explain Donald Trump. And I'll say to them, listen, you explain Donald Trump. I can't explain it. So we're going to have, I don't know how much Adele we're going to hear during tomorrow's dinner, but we'll certainly have a lot of Donald Trump to hear.
All right. Ken Rudin is host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Ken, thanks for joining us and have a great Thanksgiving, whether
Happy
you talk politics or not.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Anthony. Thanks a lot.